I'm very happy to be here to talk to all of you about how to conduct effective evaluations of the work that you do in the support groups that you lead. And I just want to say a word of thanks to the people who fund our center's work, the Center for Mental Health Services Research and Policy is funded by the U.S. Department of Education, the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research part of the U.S. Department of Education, and also by SAMHSA, the Center for Mental Health Services. And they fund a lot of the work that we do, and specifically the work that we do helping self-help and peer support organizations be able to do research and evaluation and also doing studies that we do here at the university of their activities. So I want to talk a little bit about what you need to think about if you would like to consider evaluating what goes on in the support groups that you lead. And one of the things that you have to think about when you are pondering this issue is, what's your goal in conducting the evaluation? What is it you're trying to accomplish? And I'll tell you a little bit about the different kinds of evaluations you can conduct, and the different kinds are related to different goals you might have. So I'll say more about that in a moment. You need to think about what type of evaluation you want to conduct. And we'll talk about the different types of evaluations and designs you might use. You want to talk and think about who the evaluation is for. Is it for you as the group leader? Is it for the members of your group? Is it for your state or local affiliate that is trying to, let's say, get an idea about what are some of the unmet needs of people that are attending support groups? Not because the groups aren't functioning well, but because maybe people are needing a support group to be led in another language, or maybe they're needing a specific kind of information that isn't being given out right now at the support group. So who's the evaluation being conducted for? How are you going to share the results? Are you going to write them up? Are you going to present them verbally to support group members? Are you going to put them on a website? So that's another thing you want to think about. And another thing you might want to ponder is whether or not you'd like to publish the results of the evaluation. Now, I know many of you might be sitting there thinking, oh boy, publish, that's way, way more than I'm thinking about doing with my evaluation. But I think once you start using some of the tools that DVSA already makes available to support group leaders, and using some of the tools that are already created for you to use, you'll find that it's not a huge step to go from those DBSA homegrown tools to using actual research instruments. You'll have to hook up with a researcher, but they're out there, and they're interested probably more than ever before in studying the effects of peer support and self-help and trying to better understand how it can complement other kinds of more formal services. So let's talk a little bit about what evaluation results can be used for. And one of the things you could use evaluation results for is to document the outcomes of the people who come to your groups. So I'm going to say a little bit more about what I mean by outcomes. But these are, simply put, the results that you're hoping to achieve when you lead a support group. People feel better informed. People feel less afraid. They feel more hopeful. They feel better able to recover. Those are outcomes that might be expected to result from the support groups that you lead. Secondly, you might be reporting on what researchers call the process of the group. Now, I'm not talking about that fancy primary process that psychiatrists and psychologists talk about. When we talk about process in an evaluation, we're talking about the actual activities that go on in the group, how many people come to it, how many times the group meets. Those are kind of the logistical details of what goes on when you lead a support group. And the process is expected to lead to the outcomes that are achieved by your participants. So the fact that you, let's say, lead a weekly support group might cause over a 6-month period people to feel more hopeful about their recovery. The fact that the group occurs weekly is process. The fact that people feel more hopeful is an outcome. And we'll say more about that in a minute too. You might want to be using the evaluation results to measure the level of satisfaction of the people who come to your group. That's probably the most important reason you would want to conduct an evaluation, to see how satisfied people are and to really get a sense of what they're satisfied with and what they might be dissatisfied with in your group. So here you're really talking about quality improvement, trying to figure out some things people might be dissatisfied with might be very easy to change. People might need a certain kind of information that Ingrid can make readily available to you or someone else from the national office can make available. But you don't happen to know that they need that information because it just hasn't come up in any of the group discussions so far. But when you give people a chance in an evaluation to think about some things that, some needs that aren't being met, that's when you identify whether you might be able to improve the quality of what you're offering when you lead your support group. So some of this involves identifying gaps in group activities, things that could be added or changed. You might be wanting to provide evidence to funding agencies. Is anyone out there leading a DBSA support group that gets some level of funding, maybe from your state or from contributions or donations? Is that true for anyone, or is everybody leading their support groups for free?
For free.
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 Nobody getting any funding, huh?
Well, I'm applying for 3 grants right now through SAMHSA.
Perfect. Perfect. So who's this?
This is Randy in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hey, Randy. One of the things that will bolster a grant application is the ability, is first of all saying we do some evaluation of our support groups that we lead, and here are some results for you to take a look at. And that's whether or not you're applying for funding for support groups or for anything else. It helps to establish your legitimacy. And the final reason that you might want to use evaluation results is to contribute to the whole research process that goes on to inform the field about the effectiveness of self-help and peer support. You know, we live in an era where if you can't prove that what you're doing works, you don't have as large a voice as if you can. And so, again, I know many of you aren't, you know, thinking about evaluation in order to contribute to the science of our field, but that's a reason over time that you might engage in some research to evaluate your support groups. So basically what we're talking about here is that knowledge is power. Have you all heard that phrase? Having the knowledge, having some results from your evaluation can make you more powerful and can help you lead a better support group and can also turn into more power for DBSA and DBSA's mission. So knowledge is power, and that's why in my presentation I have a little slide that represents that. So I said I would talk a little bit about what I mean by process and what I mean by outcome, so I just want to touch on that one more time because I'll bring it up again. It's really simple. An outcome is a status or a result that people achieve after receiving services and supports. Now, you lead support groups for DBSA to help people achieve outcomes, and I've already mentioned one, and that's increased hopefulness. Would somebody be willing to speak up and mention another outcome that you're hoping your participants might be achieving by coming to your groups? I know there's somebody out there that's brave enough. What's another thing that you're hoping might happen for the group members that come to your groups?
This is Bonnie from DBSA Sakasana, and one of the things that we try to do is have people feel a sense of empowerment when they, not only when they come into the group meeting, but also when they leave the meeting as well.
Perfect. That is outcome that many people feel is specifically related to peer support and self-help. and often isn't an outcome that people achieve when they get more traditional services, which sometimes are disempowering, make people feel less powerful. Anyone else think of an outcome that they're hoping their group members are achieving?
Yes, this is Randy. We take something as simple as the information sheets off prescriptions and go through those. Everybody's got one, and they looked at the different difficulties, the reactions, the interactions with other drugs, talking about how to care for these, and just so that they're more knowledgeable. And always at the end, we'll say, now, if you leave these in the front seat of your car on a hot, sunny day, you might as well throw them away. And that always gets... That always gets their attention. They got that hurts in the pocketbook. So
that's wonderful. Randy has just illustrated another outcome that DBSA support groups are aiming for, and that's increased knowledge. Whether it's knowledge about your meds and how they work and the fact that they need to be cared for properly or else they lose their potency and their power, or knowledge about what a mood disorder is, and how to get services for it. Knowledge about so many things is part of what goes on in DBSA support groups. And knowledge is an outcome, something that we hope changes about the participants that come to your groups. So we talked about things, qualitative, subjective things like hopefulness and empowerment. We talked about knowledge. I'd say one more outcome that DBSA groups hope to achieve is that their group members have greater skills. They might be aimed at helping people be able to stand up for themselves, self-advocacy skills. Sometimes over time, people that come to DBSA support groups are able to develop skills to deal better with their family members and have better family relationships as a result of listening to some of what other group members have been through with their families. So that's just some examples of outcomes, and I'm sure you're thinking of others if you're thinking either about the group you lead or maybe a support group that you've attended in the past. The other type of evaluation that's important to think about and doesn't get as much attention, but frankly, it is just as important, especially since many of you are doing these groups for free, is that process that I talked about. It's information describing what goes on at the group, who attends it, and who leads it. So some process pieces of information you might be tracking might be things like the number of group participants that ever came to one of your groups over, let's say, a one-year period. If you add them all up, doesn't matter whether they come regularly, just people that came at all, how many different people came to one of the support groups that you led, that's a piece of information that's process information. If that turns out to be 40 people, then you've touched 40 lives, all right? Another piece of process information might be the average number of people that come to your groups. If you have maybe had 40 people show up one or more times over a year, chances are you don't have a group where 40 people show up on average. Most people's average group attendance is a lot smaller, maybe anywhere from 3 to 5 to maybe 10. And maybe some of you have a larger average group attendance. But most support groups don't tend to function real well if they get too big. So that is something that you can track and report. And another aspect of that you might be reporting and tracking in an evaluation has to do with the number of years of experience of the people that lead your groups. If you're able to say, for example, that in the state of Arizona, on average, DBSA support group leaders have 3 or more years of group leading experience, that's pretty impressive. 3 years might not seem like a long tenure, but let me tell you, in mental health, given high turnover of traditional providers, someone that's had 3 years of experience leading DBSA support groups, if I read that, I think to myself, wow, this is a group of experienced support group leaders that Arizona has. So those are just illustrations of what I mean by outcome and process information that you might be tracking in your evaluation. So, just to kind of summarize, and then I'm going to stop and take some questions, the reasons why you might want to evaluate your DBSA support group is you might want to measure the level of group satisfaction of the members that come to your group. For example, would they recommend your group to someone else that's in need of similar help? You might want to document the outcomes of people that come to your group. You might want to say what percentage of group members feel that they're recovering from their mood disorder. You might want to be measuring the degree of change that's experienced by group members. So now I'm going to introduce a little bit more sophisticated concept to you. When we talk about measuring change in people, I think we all know that that's what the purpose of DBSA support groups is, to help people change. But the way that researchers measure change is to measure someone at one time point and then wait a little bit while they're being exposed to the group and participating in it and its magic is working on them, and then they measure them at a second time point. Many times that's 6 months of exposure to an intervention, or in this case to a support group. Sometimes it's 1 year of exposure. It doesn't mean you have to have come to every single group meeting, but that you've been coming to a group for a specific period of time. And we take the scores people had at the time one assessment and compare them to the scores that they have at the time two assessment. And if it's a positive thing, we're hoping that things like hopefulness and empowerment are going up at time two. And then if it's a negative thing, like discouragement or depression, we might be hoping that that's going down at time two. So that's what I'm talking about by degree of change experienced by the people who come to your group. So do they feel more hopeful? Do they feel less alone? Might be something you'd measure in an evaluation. I talked a little earlier about reasons to evaluate your groups that you might be wanting to identify gaps in group activities. This is also referred to as a needs assessment. Do your members want more information on specific topics? Do they want more involvement in advocacy to come out of the support group? Do they want different kinds of support than they might be getting? So that would be a needs assessment. Evidence for funding agencies, we talked about that. And also research to inform the field. What aspects of peer support, DBSA peer support in particular, are critical in helping people recover and helping them to lead an active, full life, even though they have a mood disorder? So I want to stop for a minute and take some questions to see if everything's pretty clear to folks, because I want to turn next to doing some nuts and bolts about what you might want to be considering in deciding whether to evaluate your support group and what to do in order to evaluate it. But before we go there, how about some questions or comments?
On a personal inventory for the person that's been there after a period of time, looking at themselves now versus 6 months or a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Is this something that is really subjective? You let this person put it into a couple of sentences rather than having checking off some items that are suggestions?
Well, in the world of research, checking off items is actually seen as more rigorous than someone reflecting on whether or not they've actually changed, believe it or not. But I would say that you could do either of those kinds of ways of getting at whether or not people change. You can, you know, basically say, do you feel more hopeful now than you did the day you came to your first group meeting? And let the person tell you. But the way researchers would evaluate that would be to administer a scale that measures hopefulness the first time a person came to a group meeting, and then to measure it, let's say, 6 months later, to ask the person to fill out that hopefulness scale, and then do some comparisons involving numbers and statistics to see if there was a significant change. So I think either are valid. I think the first method is certainly a lot easier for most group leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But the more sophisticated research method is to do the second thing of administering scales. Did that answer?
Yes, if laying it out that way on a scale of where they were and where they are now, that they can mark a difference. That's I think that's helpful to the peer that's attending also.
Mm-hmm. How about other questions or comments that people have at this point?
My comment would be one of more practical. The membership in our group, and I'm sure other groups, is very dynamic. So if we do this evaluation, you know, have members follow evaluation, those who are willing to do it, 6 months and a year from then, many of them may not be coming anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the other practical consideration for, like, a group, you know, for any single group, is that there's a lot of factors that determine how well or hopeful a person feels in 6 months to a year that are completely outside of the group. And, you know, the group might be a very small factor in that. You know, with a mental health condition, it could be a roller coaster ride.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in response to your first comment, if you don't think you're going to be able to measure people over time, you wouldn't want to do the pre-test, post-test. You'd want to do a different kind of evaluation. So you wouldn't even try that if you're thinking that some of your group members are not going to be there in 6 months. And it certainly is the case that many things in addition to your group influence how people are doing and what their outcomes are. So that's always important to keep in mind. No matter what you find from your evaluation, you won't know for sure that it's due to the group unless the group members tell you that specifically. So good points, very good points. Any other questions or comments?
Go ahead.
We at DBSA Sakasana evaluate our members on a yearly basis. We invite them for free pizza party, and we get feedback, and we do go over it. We make, you know, a summary of the evaluations, but then we find it very difficult taking that next step.
Ah, okay. Well, let's actually then go on to talk about that, because the whole point of doing the evaluation is to take the next step, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just, you know, I mean, I do the research to do the research. You guys don't. You do the research and the evaluation to improve your groups. So let's move on to that, because DBSA has some pretty nifty tools to help you make that step. And maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the dilemmas, even though you've got the tools, in actually applying what you learn to improving your groups. The things that you need to consider in designing your evaluation is, first of all, who's going to complete the survey? Who's going to complete the evaluation? Is it going to be new group members? Is it going to be old group members? Is it going to be ex-members? Believe it or not, support group research has actually surveyed all of those kinds of members. I think for most of you, it's going to be people that come to your group meetings a few times. But there may be other kinds of evaluations you would want to engage in. But that's one of the first things that you need to think about. Who are you going to ask to complete the survey? The second thing is, how are you going to distribute it? Are you going to give out the survey at group meetings? Are you going to mail it to people? If you're going to mail it, then you're going to have their address and their name. Maybe you're going to give it out at DBSA conferences or meetings. That's another thing that you'll need to decide. And when you're thinking about what survey is she talking about, DBSA has a tool, a survey that you can use, that you can download or get a copy of in the mail, that was designed specifically for DBSA groups. So that's what I'm talking about here, and we'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. How are you going to get the completed surveys back? Let's say you give a survey to everybody at one meeting and ask them to fill it out before they come to the next meeting. Are people going to remember to bring them? What if people don't come to the next meeting? So that's something you're going to have to give some thought to. how are you going to ensure people's confidentiality and privacy? I mean, the way to do that is to tell them, don't put your name on this. But obviously, if you're doing an evaluation where you're measuring people at two points in time and you want to be able to match their questionnaires, you really can't do that. So in most cases, you're just going to be asking people to fill out the DBSA quality instrument and not put their names on it. But you probably are going to want to have a little information about them, and I'll talk about that in a minute. How are you going to analyze the survey data? Are you going to do it by yourself? Can other people help you? You know, someone that attends your group might actually have some data analysis skills. We all know that people are attending groups that are professionals, CPAs, some people that have some research experience, people that know how to use spreadsheets, which are simple ways of computing percentages and averages and things like that. So can other people help? And is some research assistance available? Are you hooked up in any way with your local university or any kind of research resources? And then finally, what are you going to do with the results? These are all things that you're going to want to consider when you're thinking about whether to do an evaluation. Now, Ingrid mailed to everybody the DBSA Support Group Quality Survey. And all of you should have received that. Ingrid, did that go out maybe a little bit earlier today?
Yeah, it went out right around lunchtime today. So those of you that haven't checked your email today, you may not have gotten it yet, but it should be waiting for you.
Okay. So when you open this up, you'll see a two-page survey that was designed by DBSA for evaluation purposes. And I'm going to say a few words about why you might choose to use that survey versus some others that you could use. One of the major reasons to use it is it's all ready to go. DBSA will put it in your hands. It's designed for DBSA support groups. That's pretty cool. Second, there's an administration guide that tells you how to use the survey, what to do and what not to do, some tips and tricks. And also one of the neat things about this administration guide is it talks to you about how to link the survey results to quality improvement activities that you can engage in. So Sacramento folks, you know, that's one of your challenges, is to take that information and use it to, you know, create changes in your groups and improve your groups. This administration guide actually has some tips and tricks and suggestions for how you might want to do that. Another reason or that you might want to choose to use the survey is, let's say you are part of a statewide group of DBSA support groups, and you'd kind of like to compare, anonymously, of course, because that makes it a little less scary, you'd like to compare the satisfaction levels of people who attend different support groups. And the fact that everybody can have access to the DBSA quality survey, support group quality survey, means that everybody, if they wanted to, could administer it to their group members over a period of time, let's say, you know, just ask everybody to fill it out once, collect those, and then follow the administration guides that you get from DBSA and compute the very simple statistics that would help you be able to compare a support group in one part of the state with a support group in another part of the state. So that's another kind of cool thing that you could do. And finally, the DBSA quality survey collects information that helps you figure out whether or not your group is occurring at a convenient time for people, at a convenient location, so that you can think a little bit about, first of all, if you were going to start another group, what are your current group members telling you about the convenience of the one you have already? Are they saying, you know, I come to this group, but I can't get here all the time because it occurs in the evenings and I have da-da-da to do in the evenings? So that might lead you to believe that, gee, if we're going to start another support group, maybe it shouldn't be in the evening. Maybe we should try to be doing one in the late afternoon. You might realize that there's a number of people who can only attend a support group on weekends, let's say, and you're not willing to lead a group on weekends, or you don't have the resources for that. So then you realize we've got to start letting people know that they could go to the online support group that DBSA runs if they would like to participate in a support group on weekends. So we got to get the word out about that, because there are people for whom, you know, the weekend is the only time they could do it. So this information about, is the group convenient, is the location convenient, the fact that the DBSA survey asks about that is important, and I think makes that survey really, really helpful. So I don't know how many people were able to open that up and take a look at it, but you'll see that it asks people to put the date on. It asks them how long they've been attending the support group. And I would suggest adding a question. You know, it's one thing to say, well, I've been coming to this support group for like a year. What I would want to know if I was a group leader was, I had a question that might ask, how many times have you attended this group in the past month, if it meets weekly, or in the past 6 months, if the group only meets monthly? But I wouldn't just want to know how long have you been coming. I'd like to know how regularly have you been attending. Why do we want to know this? Well, you know, the people that are maybe not doing so well, maybe that's because they haven't been coming very long. And you want to know that when you look at the responses, because you want to be able to take account of the fact that people who have been attending only for a very short time might be different in their satisfaction levels or different in the needs that they have. So I'd consider adding a question, and that's perfectly okay. The DBSA support group quality survey can have items added to it. So you might want to add a question that's asking how many times they come to the group over the past month or over the past 6 months or over the past year, whatever you'd like to know. You might want to do some, the survey then goes on to ask whether the location of the group is convenient, and if not, why not, and whether the time and day of the support group meetings are convenient, and if not, why not. And then it goes on to indicate, ask the person to indicate the reasons you choose to attend this support group. And I think that that can be really important information for support group leaders, because you may feel you're leading the group for one particular reason, but you may learn that a lot of the people that are coming to the group might be coming for another reason. So these are reasons that people check off, and I'm sure that Ingrid and the people at the national organization spent some time talking to support group members about what are some typical reasons people come to support groups. But in the survey, they can check off things like to make friends, to learn strategies for living well with a mood disorder, to motivate me to follow my wellness and treatment plan, to find hope that recovery from a mood disorder is possible, to get recommendations on finding resources in my community. So those are all things, and there's some others on there, that people can check off, and that can be very important information for group leaders. Why are people coming to your group? Now, you know, hopefully they're bringing that up and talking about that during the group, but it's also an opportunity to see how people respond to specific things they can either decide to check or not check. So that's the fourth thing that they do. In this, I'm describing the instrument because I'm assuming that not everybody was able to open it and take a look at it. Then people are asked whether they feel that these reasons they're coming to the group are actually, that these needs that they have are actually being met. So if you're coming to the group to make friends, are you making friends? If you're coming to the group to get recommendations on finding resources in your community, are you getting those recommendations? So that's a way to know whether or not you're meeting people's needs. We talked about the idea that doing evaluations can help you identify unmet needs. And then on the second page of this survey, people are asked to rate statements based on their experiences in the support group. So here's, you know, I'm sure all of you have filled out questionnaires where you're asked, you know, to say whether something is true all of the time, most of the time, sometimes or never. That's all pretty familiar to folks, right? So one of the first things people are asked is, I feel welcome at the group. And so people then check all of the time, most of the time, sometimes or never. I get a chance to share with the group is another thing people are asked to rate. I feel safe sharing sensitive information with the group. After this support group, I feel more hopeful. I learn new strategies and information for living with a mood disorder. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those items that correspond, as you may have noticed when you're looking at this or just listening to me talk about it, they correspond to the needs people are asked about. And then the 7th item asks, is there anything else we can do to improve your experience in the group? And then people are asked to kind of identify themselves as either a person living with a mood disorder, a family member, or a friend of a person living with a mood disorder, or to otherwise describe themselves. So I've just walked you through the DBSA support group quality survey. You all have it in your email, or Ingrid can send you a paper copy. And that is a very user-friendly, ready-to-apply tool that you can use once you've decided things like, who do I want to give this to? How do I want to get it in their hands? How do I want to get it back from them? How am I going to analyze the information that is in there once they've completed it? And how am I going to share that, and who am I going to share it with? And how am I going to use it to improve my group? Now, another thing that Ingrid sent you was this administration guide. I call it an administration guide. It actually doesn't say that. It actually, at the top of it, it says, using the DBSA support group quality survey. So Ingrid sent that to all of you. And it has on page 5 some next steps for once you've identified some information that is a result of your evaluation, what you might want to do next. So let's say you've administered your survey, you've gotten it back, you've done some analysis of it, and we'll talk about that in a moment if we get an opportunity to, and you find that a lot of people are indicating that they need a type of information that doesn't get brought up very often. So now what are you going to do about that? And starting on page 5, there's a set of suggestions, and I guess I would call it encouraging tips, about how to get started in using the information that you might get about a new need that you'd like to try to address, and how to go about making a few changes that might better serve the people that come to your group. So this is an example of how you could do an evaluation and then use that information to improve your group. So now I'd like to just stop for a minute and take some questions and comments from the people that are on the phone. Were most people aware before today's call that this instrument, this survey was even available to you?
No.
No.
Well, hey, I'm very delighted that you were on tonight then, because I'll tell you, most support group leaders don't have a nifty survey and how to administer it and what to do with the results once you get it to rely upon. And it sounds like, you know, I don't know, Ingrid, at the national meetings, is there a session on how to use the survey and that type of thing?
Well, you know, we've mentioned it here and there. We've tried to include it in mailings and that sort of thing, but I think sometimes our chapter leaders experience information overload, so it can be difficult to make sure everybody knows about it. But we can certainly do a better job of trying to make sure people know that it exists.
And not everybody comes to the meeting, right? So we might think about some other ways to support people that are trying to use the survey and trying to work with the results to change and improve their groups. Maybe we can have another teleconference to be attended by people who have tried to use the survey or people that are getting ready to use the survey, for example. And we can talk a little bit about what kind of dilemmas and problems you're running into, as well as what kind of solutions you've been able to arrive at. So how about some other comments and questions people might have in hearing about this tool and hearing about the fact that there's actually a guide for how to use it?
I think it's good. One thought that came to me as you were describing it is that for a lot of people, people like me, would rather do something on a web form than on a piece of paper, and maybe that would improve their anonymity. And I was wondering if DBSA could develop a web form, like if, you know, if a group requested it, give them a URL so the URL would just be for your group, and people could fill out the form as an alternative to doing it on paper. And that would be a way, of course, for DBSA to collect information also.
That's a very interesting suggestion. And there might even be some groups and group leaders out there that are familiar with, you know, you can get free survey tools on the Internet and design your own survey based on these same questions that are in the survey. So there's lots of ways that that might be able to happen, either using, you know, the national office, or a state could work on this issue, too.
My thought on that was that if there is a pretty standard form that any group in the country could use, not only does that become a tool for the group, but it also becomes a tool for national, because then they get an idea, because the bigger population you have filling out these forms, the better the data is. So like if I get, you know, 10 forms from my group, well, that's some information about my group, but it doesn't really show, you know, it's not much of a population. But if 10 people from, you know, 100 groups fill this out, then you have 1,000 data points.
That's a perfect example of the different ways you might use evaluation. All the way down from the, I actually am only interested in the responses of my own group members, to, you know, DBSA National's desire to have the responses of hundreds or even thousands of people that attend the group. So it just depends on what it is you want to do with the evaluation. But I like the way you're thinking. That's very interesting. It would take some resources, though, to do something like that.
It does, but it's certainly something that we can look into, David. So I'll try to spend some time thinking through that and see how we might be able to do something similar to that.
Okay, thanks, Ingrid.
How about some other comments? Sacramento, would you be willing to share a little bit of your experiences in trying to take your evaluation results and move forward with them?
I think it's actually Sukasana that was... it's a hard name to remember, right, Bonnie? She's probably got herself on mute.
Sorry. I don't know whether I'm on or off at the moment. I apologize.
You're on now.
I'm on now. Okay. What was the question? I'm really sorry.
That's okay. I was just asking if you would be willing to share a little bit of some of the, you know, dilemmas that you've run into in trying to take the evaluation information and use it to improve your groups.
Mainly that we're a small board, doing a lot of things, and we need to do strategic planning, which we need to learn how to do. So that's kind of where it becomes difficult. As I said, we do a survey every year, a written survey during our annual meeting, and then we make annual telephone calls to all of our members.
Uh-huh.
So we're also, to some extent, able to survey at that point, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that next step of, okay, here's the information, here's what people want, how do we make it happen?
Right. And I'll share a little secret with you from doing a lot of evaluations of more traditional, better-funded, professional service delivery programs. They don't do much with their evaluation results either.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm a health educator by trade, so this is all what, you know, 4 years of college was about. And, you know, I've heard people say it's ridiculous to survey if you don't do anything with it. However, I'll also say that we have educationals, and we survey the attendees who come to the educationals, and that we do information with, in terms of whether to get the speaker back, in terms of future topics people want.
One of the things I tell people who have limited resources to make a lot of changes is that that's your perfect excuse to keep your evaluation very simple. So if, for example, you're not going to be able to start new groups or do them at more convenient times or whatever, but you're certainly willing to provide new kinds of information as long as you can get it from other sources like the National or off of the web, then surveying people about what kind of information they need that they're not getting is a pretty safe piece of information to get, because chances are you're going to be able to meet at least one or two of those unmet information needs. And if you're not going to be able to do much more than that, then what I would say is only gather evaluation data on unmet information needs. Don't go into all of the other things that you're not going to be able to address. Another thing I advise people to do with their evaluations is that some of what you learn goes into your long-range plans, not your short-range plans. So if you learn that you really need a support group that is led in Vietnamese, for example, you're not able to do that right away, but you put that into your long-range plan, keep your eyes and your ears open for funding that might be available for cultural diversity or linguistic diversity in group leading, or hearing about a program at a local university that does free translation. All of those things, the important point is that you know about the need and you're keeping your eyes and your ears open for how you might be able to meet it, but you're not necessarily thinking you're going to meet it right away. But if you don't ask, you won't know that the need is there and that it's an unmet need.
Okay.
So I guess my word to everyone on the call is don't be afraid to do the evaluation because you feel that you're going to feel badly, that you can't meet everybody's needs. That's just a given before you even do the evaluation. The other thing about the evaluation that I want to clue everybody in on is you will also learn some wonderful things about your groups. You'll learn the ways in which you are meeting people's needs and how important those groups are to folks. And that is, I think, very energizing and very affirming for the folks that spend a lot of time and effort leading the groups, keeping their skills good, showing up, opening up the room, making the coffee, whatever it does, whatever it takes to lead a group to really get some evidence that it's making a difference in people's lives is very affirming. And that, to me, that plus trying to identify some unmet needs and meet them, are the two most powerful things about doing an evaluation if you're a support group leader. There's other very powerful things, too, if you're a national or if you're a statewide. But if you're in the trenches leading a group, evaluation can affirm and inform. And I think those are some reasons that you might want to think about doing it in the future. So it looks like we have about maybe 3 more minutes for questions. Does anyone have a burning question or a comment that you think others might be able to learn from?
I have a question.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Okay. I had to start the group over again, and it's been going on for 2 months. And I don't think this would be a good time to evaluate. I don't know.
I think that's an excellent comment. And I would say yes, if there's been some fluidity or a little bit of instability in the group, or there's been a recent change in group leader, or anything that's in flux, that isn't a very good time to evaluate the group. You might want to go another few months into leading your group and then think about doing an evaluation.
I wanted to just mention, too, I didn't send this over to you, Judith, so but just in case people don't realize as well, you have a very similar survey but slightly different for people who are new members to your group. Target the questions a little bit more on, you know, kind of those first-time experiences. I know oftentimes we get a lot of calls and concerns from our chapters who have a person in the group once and then they never show up again. And as you mentioned, there are a million reasons why that could be. But to try to help people figure out some of those reasons, we developed an additional tool for those new members that might be helpful in kind of identifying some of those things that we might have some control over.
Where is that survey?
That it's in the same place as the other quality surveys. It's actually in the chapter management site, and I can send you all a link to that one as well.
That'd be wonderful.
It's very similar, but it just targets a little bit more to new members.
Any other comments or questions before we end for this evening?
I have a question, maybe the rhetorical. As I said, we do the telephone calls once a year, and this year there were, 150, 160 people. And about 80 to 90 of those people had emails, and two emails went out, two emails about a week apart went out requesting people answer questions, three questions. Most people did not respond that way, and many people did not return telephone calls. So that's why it can be very hard to evaluate completely. Do you have thoughts in terms of, that's why we do the pizza? Do the
yep.
free pizza? Is
yep. Well, one of the things that researchers do is they almost always pay people for participating in research. It's just the only way you're going to get a good, what we call response rate. Most people are barraged now with requests to participate in surveys. Many are not legitimate. Some are like sales come-ons. And to the extent that you can motivate people, as long as you're not coercing them, you know, if you were getting people to do a survey who were homeless and hungry by giving them pizza, that's not good. But, you know, giving people a reason to come in and participate because they'll also have some pizza or donuts and coffee or whatever, that's perfectly acceptable. And I think also conveys to people, since you're not able to pay them for their time to participate, it conveys to them that you understand that filling out this survey is a gift from them to you,
mm-hmm.
and that you take it seriously, so much so that you'd like to offer them a little something back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same reason that DBSA tries to coerce all of you to fill out your surveys by providing additional brochures and things like that.
So there you go. But, you know, if you had 50 members and had a budget of $50, you know, a $1 McDonald's, you know, gift certificate, if you could get it into people's hands, would get you a lot more responders. And some people actually do surveys that way, that you can email those certificates to people once they return a survey. But I realize you don't have those kinds of budgets. And so, you know, the most often that you can do is pizza or some donuts, and that's good. That's perfectly okay. If it increases your response rate, the gentleman that talked about the fact that the more data, the better, was absolutely correct. Okay, well, those of you who get my presentation know that there were many other things we could have talked about today, but I think many of you are kind of at the beginning of your thinking about evaluations and whether you'd want to do it and how and why you'd want to do it. So I think we've, you know, answered some at least initial questions and kind of gotten the initial information into your heads. And if people are interested, maybe in a few months we can talk about some other things related to evaluating your support groups.
We would love that. And I just wanted to say thank you to Judith for being with us tonight. It was definitely a special treat to have someone like her on our quality calls. And I wanted to thank everyone for giving up a little bit of time of your Wednesday evening to join us and to listen to this presentation on evaluations.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for